Introducing Kimber & Co. Two chicks, real talk, with nothing to prove. Touching on topics from the bedroom to the boardroom in an effort to tantalize and normalize. It all matters.
Welcome to Kimber & Co. I'm Kimber McCafferty. This is our podcast. It's going to be an all-encompassing podcast meant for men and women alike. We want to touch on relevant, real topics with no hidden agenda. My background real quick, for those of you who don't know me, I have a background in broadcasting. I have been a nationally syndicated co-host for many years in my former life. I've been on HSN for the last 15 years, and I'm a business owner and a mom. I've asked my friend Lauren to join me.
Good morning.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. We really didn't set the stage too much last week.
Yeah, thanks for having me this morning. Super excited to be here. Again, my name is Lauren, and I am originally from Jacksonville, Florida. I grew up here and went to the Bowles School, graduated, went on to Wake Forest University in North Carolina, and Eventually, spent quite a few years as a stay-at-home mom and eventually decided to go back into the workforce. So I put myself through nursing school and ended up working in the fertility industry, which I absolutely love. And I have three beautiful daughters and a wonderful family and friends, and so happy to be here.
Awesome. Today, Ronnie Soud's joining us. Ronnie Soud is my strategic business partner. We both are from here, but moved away from here and ended up back in Jacksonville. No, it's good. You need the mic closer. Get me closer. I'm going to actually take, because I want you to talk a little bit. And this is Ronnie. Say hey.
Hey.
So I wanted Ronnie to come on. Ronnie has invaluable information when it comes to marketing. He's taught me an awful lot. I'd like to think maybe one day I'll retire because of you. I think you bring that's the plan. Like, we're not in this for so much fun. We want to have a good time, but we're going to laugh because we started dancing last night, and I told her that 3 years ago you told me that if you were a hot chick, you would probably start dancing real quick on videos, and I didn't, right? I said, this is how we're going to open the show today. I'm like, dude, he's been telling me this.
So here she brings along her dancing buddy from way back when, just to break it down a little bit. We had so much fun. I'd like to point out how much fun we were having, and your jeans. Let's talk about the hot topic of the Levi jeans and how much attention they got last night.
Like, we had 10,000 people comment on something, but the jean, I have an addiction to or an obsession with vintage Levi's right now.
They look great.
Thank you. But Lauren, you are actually a dancer. So this all started, and it's part of our friendship. And listen, we're just a bunch of middle-aged women not ready to get old, and we actually do dance a lot every time we're together. But you were accepted to the Joffrey School of Ballet School of Dance.
A long time ago, yes, when I was in my earlier years of, I was probably only 12 when I auditioned for it. I did. I got a scholarship for an intensive summer program there and just loved dance, just kept me super disciplined and really got me where I needed to go in college and pursuing, you know, any professional aspirations afterwards. I danced with the Nutcracker here in Jacksonville a couple of years after becoming an adult. So I've loved to kind of keep it in my wheelhouse. You know, it's just something that's always been a part of my life. So
as we expose ourselves and get real and then open up the mic every Wednesday morning with articulation and incense is what we'd like to think. We were laughing last night that we were dancing in our kitchen and just going to post it and not care anyway, because it's all about just having a good time, right?
There you go.
Yeah, it's fun. So
I mean, no one wants to see me do that.
You're too funny. You don't think so?
If you've seen me dance, no, I can guarantee you no one wants to see me do that.
You're back in Jacksonville. You have a beautiful family, a beautiful, successful, beautiful wife that owns a very successful personal training business, Fitness by Patty, out at the beach. I do think you're a sleeper cell. You are one of the nicest men I've ever met, and I'm honored to call you my friend. And I love doing business with you. You have taught me a lot about marketing, and what we have a really good time and like to do for our clients is here's the deal. If you're not making money from your our marketing efforts, you're probably not going to keep us around. So we're always very careful as to what we bring to the table, what type of solution that we are wanting to kind of customize for each client that we work with together. And that's how we became friends. We met on a mutual client. We've had a lot of success with that client, in fact. And I just like your methodology. So I just would like for you to take a minute and talk a little bit about what you do, who you are, and what kind of benefit you bring to small to medium-sized businesses. You've had some really big clients, too, like Florida Blue was a client of yours at one point.
I had all of Blue Cross.
Blue Cross.
Every state. And so Every state.
Okay. Yeah. I always learned something new about you.
That was a little while ago. And that, like, all those kind of experience, I've had really big clients, and that kind of shaped me to see who do I like working with, and how can I make the biggest impact too. And I found that my biggest impact comes with small to medium sized businesses. And honestly, it's probably more of a personality thing on my side than it is a knowledge thing on executing for small or large or whatever.
Was one of the things when Lauren and I sat down last night. She's like, how do I interject and become part of a marketing show being my co-host? And I said, you know, ask the layman's term questions. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you and I have struggled with is kind of dumbing down our pitch and our sell in Northeast Florida, having left the market, gone to major market marketing, which is done different. And that is, you know, more of your enterprise type companies, as you and I have talked about, which aren't using local marketing. They do need to be handled differently. And I think one of the struggles that we had when we did team up was you saw me as a single mom, and I was spending a lot more time educating and empowering my clientele to get them to move on why they needed digital. And then I have to drum up the business, sell the business, fulfill the business, do all the invoicing, and raise the child too. And so you started opening my mind to turnkey solutions, what it was going to look like for a client. But before we even start with what you offer clientele, there's a certain place that businesses need to be. You cannot just have some semi-quasi website and throw up Google Ads and expect success.
Well, that was going to be my question is when do you come into the process? Say you have a new small business owner who, you know, desperately wants to have a place in the market pretty quickly. How do you even initiate that? Where do you start with, you know, what kind of information and knowledge do you need of the actual either product or, you know, type of service that they're offering to even know, you know, where to begin with them?
Well, so there is a lot of science. Marketing is all science, right? Whereas advertising is a mix of science and kind of art. Right. But with a new client, no matter what size, you should be, all good agencies work through a process. And whoever the leader of the agency is, if it's the owner or if it's the department head, what their job is curating that process so that their team and their client can be successful. A lot of words in that. Like, basically what it means is you need to have a step-by-step formula that you do with your client, and both of you work through where they are, what they're looking for, what their goals are, and then come up with a strategic plan on how to execute that. And so no matter where they are in their business journey, if it's just as an idea, if they're just getting started, on a personal level, I help everybody out. You know, even if it's stuff that if it's clients I don't want to take, I say, let's go to lunch and let's just talk. So, you know, I'm not really on the hook to offer anything, but I want to make sure that they get off on the right foot. They have the right information. They get the lay of the land.
And sometimes that's where we've teamed up. Mm-hmm. I think that's where he'll be like, no, they need you first, because I will come in. And that's how we met. Jack's Spine and Pain Centers is one of our clients. Definitely. I'm not so involved anymore as you are, but they needed a true digital platform for your ads to fly. They weren't quite there. The PA and I kind of had a meeting of the minds after several meetings, and they anointed me and said, okay, you can do this. So I spent probably 6 months, because we wanted to index a lot of content to give them kind of steroids, you know, on the web when we did launch a new platform. So we indexed 150 pages of content within 6 months. We did an entire brand makeover, a rebrand. It was time. We brought pain into the brand because of the opioid epidemic at the time, and we are not afraid of information. You know, 90% of people on an opioid don't even know they're taking one. So let's start with that. And when we launched the new platform, you know, then you and I get it ready. Your ads start flying and you're like, okay, we can do something with this. There's a synergy here. So there is a certain place that businesses need to be for ads to be a viable option.
Yeah. You know, you have to have a certain foundation. You know, you can't just fly out there and, you know, you see this a lot of times because what's talked about most today is social media. So you see these businesses, they put so much effort, they over-index in time in doing Facebook and Instagram and all that, and they don't stop to think, where is my customer? Where are they researching about this service? Is it on Google? You know, are they on Bing? Because they buy laptops from a certain store that only sell PCs and, you know, so on. Are they on YouTube? You know, so on. So actually, I thought about you 2 days ago because we had a friend post about infertility. And I was like, now, if you're on, you know, something using like a social listening tool, right, which sniffs those words out and would then allow you to join the conversation. So all of those are they're channels and strategies that you need to consider. Where are people asking questions? Where are they looking for information around what you offer? And then you today, because there's so much noise, you do need to jump in. That's one of the big things. Someone in your organization needs to jump in.
Offering an expert, credible opinion to drive consumer behavior. Yeah.
You need to jump into the conversation, be it in comments, direct message them.
It's why we're talking about marketing openly here.
Right.
So that we can spread what we feel is proper information and empower people with the knowledge that they need to act upon in the most,
How important is it to have the right person in the organization be the head of, you know, promoting or even knowing what the company needs from a marketing perspective? I have found that in healthcare, especially, my experience has been that oftentimes
it's a family member.
Or the, you know, let's say a physician. A physician runs a practice and they're trying to initiate some sort of marketing efforts. You know, oftentimes I find that the physician is also trying to run the business as well. And there's just a kind of a different mentality that comes with that with approach to marketing.
This goes back to what we talked about last week, and I'm just going to say it. Doctors are terrible at business. They need to stay in their lane and they need to practice medicine. Everybody's trying to, it's a greed move. And unfortunately, it does end up, I believe, compromising the morale in the office, the standard operating procedures. And one of the biggest nemesis that I have working here in Northeast Florida is please quit hiring your newly graduated niece that needs a job, your mother that's, you know, just divorced that needs income, and giving them this title of marketing director and putting them at the helm. It's absolutely not serving your business. And I actually cannot work with individuals like that. I mean, it just doesn't, it doesn't work. Well, and that's what we do here in market 49 or 50. And it keeps us, this market is operating in a deficit when it comes to marketing.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's still getting off the ground for a lot of companies, which, you know, we're in 2021. That should not necessarily be the case, but you know,
we're 15 years behind in Northeast Florida,
which is crazy because it's such a big, you know, thriving city that is growing still at such a rapid pace.
It's changing fast because you have the barrier to entry to starting a business, and the types of businesses that are getting started now are different. They're lower barrier to entry. You have younger individuals that are more savvy.
Digitally, but their purchasing power may be a little off.
You know, but they're starting more from a grassroots type of thing. So I do see that changing over the course of the next 10 years. You know, but to answer your question, the person at the helm within your organization is vital because they set the tone, not only for the ads that go out, but for how important this is, how much are we going to budget, How many team members do we need in-house? They pick the outside vendors. It's the in-house person that's in charge of marketing is one of the most important people in your entire organization.
I would think so.
Well, marketing supports touches, the organization. Mm-hmm,
you know, it all, because they also have to touch today on customer service and customer support, which are two different aspects that fall within the marketing umbrella.
And really
well.
Make us business developers.
Right.
We are looking at the entire
growth. Mm-hmm.
We are looking at the entire organization. We cannot come in and give you a marketing solution, have you have some influx, and then not have you appropriate everywhere else for this growth. So we're always looking at framework when the solution works, which I'll go, Ron, you don't have a churn rate. Your customers love you. You have a system that works, and you're very honest about the mm-hmm. approach. I mean, it is what it is. So with that being said, let's talk about how different the pandemic has made. Okay, go ahead.
I want to make one point off. It's something that I take very seriously. So we've been tinkering around. I don't want to say starting a movement or whatever, but we have this free ebook on my website. It's called Monday Morning Metrics.
SoudMarketing.com. SOUD. Mm-hmm.
And so that individual that you asked, how important is it to have someone, you know, in-house? We think it's very important, but we also think that the days of sitting there and waiting for your one monthly performance meeting to understand what's going on with your website, those are done, gone. They've been gone for over, you know, a decade now.
Waste of time.
And so you should, that person in your organization, so if you're a business owner or if you are this person, the number one thing you should be doing is logging in and looking at your Google Analytics, your website stats tracker. First thing every Monday morning, 8 a.m. So the Monday morning, 8 a.m. is the movement part that we've been trying to, you know, kind of get off the ground. But the ebook gives you step by step the reports that you should be looking at to see which reports you should be looking at every Monday to tell you, is your business moving forward? Is your marketing moving forward? Are your ads working? Are they not? Where you need to make a change? And are your objectives that you're putting into your campaigns, are those aligning with what your goals are, right? For instance, if you want to get customers in Nocatee, but you have very low Nocatee traffic numbers on your website, you might need to nudge your agency over there and say, hey, I need a geo campaign over in the Nocatee area.
Explain what a geo
campaign
is.
That's the neighborhood here in Jacksonville for worldly listeners, but explain that. Yeah.
So a geo campaign is one that just runs in the Nocatee zip code.
Okay.
So you can run ads.
It doesn't run outside.
Geo-targeted.
Mm-hmm, outside of that. But those are the kinds of insights. And you need to make those decisions fast, which is why we made an ebook on it. And we also wanted to emphasize the fact that just how important this is today and what that individual in your organization should be doing. Because it can't, today things move so fast, it cannot be solely on your agency to sit there and tell you once every 30 days, we're doing good or we have problems or, you know, whatever.
So it's at the fingertips of the organization themselves.
They need
access.
To be proactive.
Yes.
And understand what they're looking at, for sure.
I would say the owner or, you know, whoever the director of marketing is or, you know, whoever they put in charge of that. That's one big thing that is the biggest game changer because it invests them even more into marketing.
Well, tie it to your business plan, tie it to your mm-hmm. CRM, let
right.
your analytics
mm-hmm.
synchronize for you and tell you when you're going to hemorrhage, where you're going to mm-hmm. hemorrhage. It's all data and science. And that's what you've helped me truly understand. We kind of back our clients in. You see volume and we cater to it,
mm-hmm.
right? And that kind of leads us. I want to talk a little bit about social media. How many times do we really need to post? I'm having fun. I'm posting a ton. But I know from a business standpoint, you really only have to post like 3 times a week. We've kind of narrowed it down and drilled it down to that's what we and our data is showing. But those posts need to be substantial. They need to pack a punch in terms of content mm-hmm. and bring people along your journey. Furthermore, the pandemic has brought search to such a higher level, we're all over searching everything, that I do believe social channels moving forward are definitely going to want you to cater to each channel. So if you're building social for Instagram, build it for Instagram. If you're building it for LinkedIn, build it for LinkedIn, mm-hmm. which they're all kind of shifting. LinkedIn's kind of this account-based marketing now, which requires a different type of content. It's one of the things that you can do on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn is the coolest social platform.
Right. And they have
more content types than anyone else.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I think makes it so cool.
Why? Talk to me about that.
Well, I think because I don't know why they did it for certain, right? But
to generate demand for it.
Yeah. So their clientele is other businesses. And so if you look at the content types that they allow you to create, like you can write long blogs in there. So they have an article. You could do posting. You could do stories. You can do a video, and you can even do live video too. They also offer, you can create courses in there, all kinds of stuff. And so it really caters to their core clientele. I think they've probably done the best at listening to their customers.
And reading their analytics to develop what usability is telling them that they need.
You know, what do our people need in order to push the platform forward? And today I think you're seeing more content and more cooler content up on LinkedIn than anywhere else. You know.
So let's dispel the myth that if you have 100,000 followers, you're making a ton of money.
Yeah, you're not.
Yeah, you're not. So it's kind of, we have fun with it. We love all of our people trying to get that Instagram and all the followers. And
You might be, but
we can look at your attribution model pretty quickly and figure out whether you're really making money from a platform. Just because you have a ton of followers doesn't mean that you are making money. It has to be a platform that's built out. But there's a huge layer of vanity coming up in all of this. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, we come across this all the time. It's, hey, so, you know, we worked really hard. We did giveaways. We have, you know, 20,000 people on Instagram, blah, 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 but we're falling short on sales. And so you're falling short on sales for a few reasons. Number one, social media is not sales. Right? That's not what it's used for.
It generates brand awareness?
It's great for generating brand awareness, but it's also, there's not a great vehicle of transferring the individual onto your website to read more about the product or service that they want to buy. You have to bake those into your strategy. And if they're not baked into your strategy to transfer the individual to complete the rest of the sales journey and to take the action that you need them to take in order to move towards a sale, you're not going to be successful. And so a lot of times people with large audiences, they're really good at the stuff that's on the platform. They're not so good at transferring the users off the platform to complete the sales. And that's where, you know, agencies like us kind of come in and, you know, say, okay, we need to do a little bit of a content shift. We need to make use of these features here. We need to go into other channels too. You know, like Google or YouTube or, you know, Facebook.
In bringing
LinkedIn,
that up.
So on and so forth. So that you can also spread and you can find the right people who are looking to buy. Some channels just have a lower probability of generating customers.
You won't even take customers without video anymore, which comes up in a hard cost. We ask customers to let us produce videos. Mm-hmm. They need to have specific messaging to drive customers to your ads, to click on them, to get business. So
I don't do social ads.
Right.
It's very hard without video.
Yes. Yeah. So as content is changing, because we were all home for over a year with this pandemic, we're all online searching more and more and more. So more content's being put up, generating more demand for more diversity in content. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're seeing. People are getting creative with reels. It is their full-time job to produce their content. It's one of the things that I offer. And it's getting more and more strenuous because of the demand on it. So why is video so important? I can give you an example. Like Instagram just changed their algorithm. They're not recognizing photos anymore, right? So if you have noticed a lack of engagement and just still graphics or pictures, it's not you. You haven't gotten uglier. Instagram has just shifted things, and they would actually like to see you post more videos. So why? Can you tell me why?
Well, video, by and large, keeps people on the platform longer.
people want to see, they want to touch, they want to talk, they want to engage.
So, you know, the whole reason for going live is that lives aren't 30 seconds long.
Oh, okay.
Lives are 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 1 hour, you know, just like you're doing here, you're broadcasting a show for an hour. That keeps everyone on Facebook and Instagram on Facebook and Instagram for that hour. And so YouTube got, they're the kings of this, right? Because people stay on YouTube not for minutes, they stay on there for hours.
Oh my gosh, I have to take my phone away from my kid.
Exactly.
Like I'm over it. I'm over YouTube.
And adults too, right? And so like my dad used to watch, you know, Arabic bands on YouTube for hours. And then every time he switched to a new video, there's more ads.
Oh, you're fresh off the boat.
Yeah. So, okay. You know, we're watching Arabic dancing, you know.
You can access anything. I mean, it's at your fingertips, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I wonder if it's
going to leave TV and cable and everything in a different crunch in the next few years, because not as many people are tuning into the TV anymore. Everybody is really going online.
No. Yeah.
Everybody is, they're searching for what they want instead of us pushing content on them. And people are finding their circle online, mm-hmm. and virtually that's where they want to hang. So it's kind of fun. I mean, I had a minute crossing over and figuring this out. You would sit with me year after year and you're like, so how, you come from this world. How long is it going to take for you to realize you just need to turn this on and go live? Mm-hmm. It's been odd. It's a little awkward.
Mm-hmm. It's more of a real human experience though. It's not as scripted. It's more, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just real. It's more honest. You can't fake it. It's just more of a live, you know, human experience, I think.
Right. You know, and in a lot of capacities, that's a better window into what's going on with you and your organization for a potential customer. You know, it kind of pulls the veil back, right?
Where do you see social headed? I think a lot of people are getting over it. They're overwhelmed. I see some mm-hmm. people dipping out because it
is
too much. Yeah. So when is it too much? I listen, I'll be real. The last meetings we've had in the last year is I need to start engaging social different. I'm a little older. I've had a hard time with it, but I also need to scale back in other ways. I'm done being on social as a human being in terms of it doesn't entertain me so much. I'd rather be outside spending time with my child, but I do understand the necessity and relevance of this social media component. Do you think we're going to continue to see more and more people open themselves up on social and become comfortable? And do you think we're going to see more business transactions happen in the social media arena? What is your future? Can you give me a 3 to 5 year trajectory of what you think would happen in this arena and what people need to think they need to be doing? What do people need to be doing?
Okay. Yeah. So here's what's really happening. Okay. So number one, don't sleep on Google. As most of you know, or maybe if you don't know, Google also owns YouTube. They are sitting on more data than anyone else on Earth. And, you know, as we know, I think data is now
everything.
It's a number one commodity in terms of what is generating revenue, big revenue, big data. So don't sleep on Google. They're not going to come out with a social platform. They quasi already have one in YouTube, but Google is sitting on more information than anyone else. They have the absolute most powerful, sophisticated, flexible advertising platform that's ever been built. And I don't think anything is going to come to rival it anytime soon. So within Google Suite, if you're just starting out on your marketing journey, where you should be is make sure that you are maximizing your Google My Business, your free business listing from Google. That's number one. Everyone needs to have that. Number two, you do need to be running some Google ads, especially on just maybe a handful of the core products and services that you want to sell. Now, Google ads, those are those 3 to 4 ads that show up at the very top of Google. Okay? They generate 47% of all the clicks that happen on a Google search. So the vast majority of clicks go to those ads. From there to get to where you were talking about, then you get into social. Okay. So once a business has kind of locked down their business listings, which Google offers them, so does Bing, so does Apple, Yelp, TripAdvisor, HealthGrade, so on and so forth. So you want to lock those down. You want to make sure that up on search, you have good visibility for the products and services that you offer. Very important to be there because search is the closest path from research to customer that you can have. So from someone researching a place, a restaurant, or a product and service, the people that do it up on search have a closer path to actually buying something. So then you get into social. Social, absolutely fantastic brand awareness tool.
And SEO. Does it help with SEO too? To be up on
SEO a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. It's a formality. You're on social.
For those
active.
Of us that don't know, SEO.
Search engine optimization.
Search engine optimization.
Those are the free listings that show up more towards the bottom of a Google result. So a lot of people say we never click on the ads and blah. Google makes $1 trillion a year out of people clicking on those ads. You're
so
clicking on the ads.
Now, yes. when you
just don't know it. Yeah.
When you run people's ads, it is very important for you to control their website. You have to, because the usability of the website and the landing page that we send ads to, they click on an ad and it goes to a landing page, and that content and the way it's kind of curated is what leads them to convert to calling you. So that's why you control it. Is that not why?
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about one of the things that I have a hard time with here in Jacksonville is people are making really good money and I log on their website and it's 10 years old and they don't see the value of having a new website. They will not invest. They look at me like I'm from another country or from another planet, that I want them to spend just a little bit of money to have a little bit more credible reputation online with their website.
It's kind of surprising. I would think that would be a focal point would be the website, just because
I think people are cheap with their websites sometimes. I am.
A connection with the business.
There's more news around social media. And so
that's they don't want to make that investment.
Because it's constantly being updated. And
yeah. So there's five news stories a day about things that change on Facebook or Instagram. You know, so it's on their mind, I feel like, a lot more. And the website gets stale happens. So, you know, but to kind of like, I don't want to gloss over. So I want to finish. You know,
you're with two chicks. You know, I'm going to take you all over.
Right.
Circle me back, Ronnie.
So when you've kind of like locked down your business up on search, you really want to jump off, tackle social media, your Facebook, your Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. Those are your brand building, your brand awareness tools. Okay. And there's free components to those. We call them organic. And there's also paid, call them ads. And, you know, I suggest using a mix of both. And the big benefit to social media is getting in front of customers and building that brand and rapport and trust before they have a problem and go looking for your service. Mm-hmm. And that tends to put your brand at the forefront of their mind when you do it right.
Can I tell you the problem? People are not consistent. Everybody thinks they want to keep social in-house until they realize how labor intensive it truly is. Mm-hmm. And it is only effective, I believe, social when you're consistent.
Yeah.
So the brand voice needs to be there. You need to be posting 3 days a week. If you're going to do testimonials, try to do them every week, every other week. Let your audience get used to the type of content that they can expect from you, because then they're going to come back for more each time. Mm-hmm. I believe that's what I have found. And I like to get more dynamic too, you know, definitely with video, going on site, getting more comfortable with doing things like this, being live. I mean, you talked me into doing this. We are doing this to generate demand for what we do.
That might be true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love what we do. Mm. I love marketing. Mm. I want to do more marketing. I think that we have a very sound, ethical solution for people. We never try and break the bank. We're always trying to make them more money. We want this to be a return on their investment. Mm-hmm.
That is a question that I have as well for you, for both of you actually, is for either a small business who's either just starting out or has been in the market for quite some time, is there kind of just a blanket sort of initial investment that you kind of come up with based on all of these different things that need to be initiated? How do business owners know or have an idea as to what was going to be required for them to get started financially?
There's no set path. That's kind of all over the map. So, you know, right now I've talked to someone who's getting started grassroots and talking to someone who's getting started. They have a parent company that's worth $1 billion.
Right. We can talk to anybody.
Well, both of them are getting started, mm-hmm. right? And so one of them has a large purse that they can draw from, sure. and one of them doesn't. So, you know, different strategies, different approaches. I personally think that sort of the sequence of where you need to concentrate, you know, your business listings online, search, then get into social is the same cadence that I would take. Also, we brought up website too to kind of expound on that. Put a lot of money into your website.
So can we talk about our first meeting? Our first meeting, fresh back in Jacksonville. I sit down at a meeting with you and I didn't understand the value of why we spent on a website and I wanted the job. Oh. So I'm like, yeah, we don't have to spend that. I'm going to build the site for free. And you're like, oh, great. Who's this chick showing up in town? This literally happened. And I'm, you know, I am actually, like, I don't like to spend a lot of money. I do spend money. But when it comes to marketing dollars, we do try to be very sound. I did get the website built for very cheap, and it shot me in the foot. I worked my ass off for these people, and I will never, ever do it again. Thank you. There is a reason that you do pay good money for websites.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
The real reason, when you work with a good web designer, you're going to hear this term called usability. And what you want is you want to build a website that the vast majority of your visitors, your target audience, understands how to use. Where do you want them to go? What do you want them to read? What do you want them to watch? Where do you want them to click? That's what a website is. A website is not an art project. It is a usability project on getting someone from point A to point B into wherever you need them to jump off to get that sale, to get that communication going.
My first insight to the level of development that does go into like websites or software, I had a friend, Angela Jones. She's a CXer, UXer. She's been doing this 20 to 25 years. We've been together, like we've known each other. We work together. But she really opened my mind like 15 years ago. She was hired by Henry Block. H&R Block. They're out of Kansas City. Moved her back there. And she would lead the focus groups that developed the usability. Mm-hmm. So when you're asked to kind of do a focus group and they spend a $250,000 on a focus group, but that's how much it matters in terms of usability. They literally put people in front of a computer and watch the way you use it and figure out how to make it easier for you to use. And then they develop it at that point. So this really is part of the metric and science into developing true like websites with integrity and usability. The one, you know, not on a local level so much, but I'm talking about your, you know, tax turbo and things like that.
Yeah. You know, along that line too. So you don't have to, well, one, we don't really use focus groups anymore. Probably when she did that, it was a while ago.
It was like 10 years ago. It's changed now because you can grab data.
It was a fantastic way.
Through,
you know. But like
digital.
For you guys listening, if you want to do the same thing, don't just launch into a website redesign. Put a heat tracker on your website and track where users click on every page of your site. These are really cheap. Lucky Orange is a great one that I use all the time. I think it costs like $7 a month.
Find where people are looking for you.
Exactly. You know, and then watch. And so what it'll tell you, it'll show you that the difference between what the Facebook users do on your website versus the Google users and so on and so forth. And you can see, are they going to the pages where you need them to go? Are they seeing the sections that you need them to see? And then there's other free tools out there. One of them is called Google Optimize that will allow you to run 2, 3, or 4 plus versions of a website page, and it'll rotate them for free to users so that you can see which one converts best. And so I have a section on my site. It's called eight reasons, right? It's 8 reasons you'll love working with me.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. And
sleeper cell salad.
There's only 8. No.
There's only 8. Don't get too excited.
So like we've played around with moving that up, down, changing the colors of it, putting a background color on it, taking, you know, flushing out some of the pieces that are on there. But, you know, when most of the time when I get fresh up calls, they're sitting at that section on my site. So having that for me is a huge usability piece, and every organization just needs to find what's your thing. Like I have a clear advantage in this market for what I do, so that works for me. But I think just assess your competition and understand your audience, and then that will dictate what you have to have on your website in order to close more business.
I think it's a perfect time for me to segue in and say this, and this is where branding can set you apart.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the things that also tipped me off to the deficit here, and I am just going to point it out, is how much people were charging people for logos. We know firsthand that we were given a proposal for a logo that we could have bought a car, and we decided at that point we were with the wrong agency. You did. And I have a new logo, you guys, and I will, my designer that we work with donated a logo to the show. And I'm excited about debuting it. But I like branding. However, branding is a cost for you. It is, to me, what sets you apart and can be the panache. And for me, it's just what I love. So I don't go in selling branding right off the bat, though, because of you and because we've tried to turn this into, hey, listen, this is where they're sitting. Mm-hmm. Some of our clients need a rebrand right off the start with what we want to bring to the table. And it is suggested. You've been sleepy for 10 years. We do need people to know that you've made changes to your platform, and a rebrand is the best way for us to do this. Our new guys starting out don't necessarily want to tie a few thousand dollars into what branding's going to look like, so we can get you started without it. Actually, if you have a viable product or service that we can make you money on to back you in to the return on your investment, so we can spend money on branding. So we go make the money we need to do what we want with platforms, and that's literally the truth. If you can, you know, kind of expand on that a little bit, I think it's kind of fun.
Yeah, you know, reinvestment is a big thing. You know, so what Kimber's talking about in branding, you know, today stretches a lot more stuff. It's photos, it's videos, it's
brand identity, brand voice, all of it.
It's value added things that you're doing within your company, like maybe when someone buys or you're doing it pre-sale, you know, so on and so forth. There's also been a big push into customer support. So it's how we're going to support you after the sale. That's a big value added thing. And all of that is kind of branding. And so, you know, when Kimber said we haven't updated in 10 years, that can be very true. We see a lot of businesses that have pushed their business forward, but it's not reflected on their website. It's not reflected in their content, their images. The video's old and doesn't talk about some of the new value adds that they have, you know, so on and so forth. So there's a lot of branding items that go into that. And I think if you're making money off of digital, you do need to reinvest. And
that branding thread is everything.
Yeah. And reinvesting in good quality branding assets, I think, is something that pays dividends, because
you that's it keeps the momentum going. Like you were saying the other day with one of your you know, businesses that you were helping with, was the response to the growth was not being met in as far as the support goes within the organization, and it can really hurt the projection. And
we've expanded, and we'd like to carry the brand to the new location, and it does need brand unity in this particular scenario. Does and data shows it. It's what we need to do, but sometimes change and growth is hard. Mm-hmm. Yes, so segueing them into, nope, I am re-wrapping that, and you just gonna let me, has been an interesting thing. And two, you have to trust us. I strong arm our clients. I mean, I'm very passionate about what we bring to the table, and I don't think that they know all the answers. So when we do work together, I do like to have a heavy hand in guidance in terms of what I believe from a consultant standpoint. It doesn't have to go my way. But in terms of what we do and being in the marketing arena, I think we bring sound advice, you know, just with great humility.
No, you know, most of mine is data led. It's, you know, hey, people are really tanking over here, or, you know, we're really winning over here. You know, let's try this. Let's move here. Let's do that. You know, so on and so forth. But, you know, usually I start to pipe up a lot more when I see it in all of our reports, and I have a lot of evidence that I can present to the client and go, hey, we need to make changes here, or, you know, this test worked out great. Let's expand on it. You know,
is there a time frame that you give for, like, if you're going to implement something new, for your business owners to know kind of what to expect? How quickly can we expect change to happen with any sort of new.
Depending on where the platform is, and I'm going to let you take it. Sometimes you send me in and give me 90 days to get the platform where you need it to run ads. Sometimes they're ready. But when you flip on the switch, what's that? Usually you give them a couple weeks. And if they're where they're supposed to be, you can start seeing the tick and traction, right?
Sometimes it's a couple of days. And then sometimes, so I've had, you know, I run my business, like one thing, you know, I'm flat fee. And so I don't do hourly charging or anything. But sometimes the initial campaign that I built out, full disclosure, what I had in my mind, it just didn't work out. And so I got to tear it down, rebuild it. And I do that at cost. And so that happens some. And so, you know, in those cases where the business doesn't have a clearly defined target market and we have to find it, you have to extend.
Trial and error a little.
Yeah. And so I got to poke around a lot more. And that does extend the time, you know. But so, like, I just got a new client on for Google Ads only. And, you know, within 24 hours, you know, his leads started to change.
That's awesome.
It is. But he's very established, you know. And
he's been indexed a while. His site's been up a long time. What does established mean? Tell me what it means.
He's been around selling his core product for a long time. He's got a very deep site. You know, he's made changes to it. He does look at his data. And he's run Google Ads before. He just wanted to sort of take it up a notch. So he came to me. Google Ads is my core product. And so it's like what I'm known for. And so he came to me and, you know, I looked at his old campaign, looked at his new campaign. And, you know, sometimes we like laugh to ourselves and we're like, oh, this is going to be really easy. And so most of the time that works out. So in his case, that worked out. So I restructured his account in my style, and that paid dividends for him like right off the bat, you know. And then, yes, in other cases where the target market isn't clearly defined, I do have to poke around more. Sometimes I have to scrap what I originally built. I do that on my own, you know, that's on my own time, rebuild it, sometimes rebuild it again, and then we're on, you know, we're on pace. So.
Why aren't Amazon ads a solution for this market? I got a phone call the other day. They're being offered here. It's just disgruntling because it's going to continue to saturate the market, and I have to go in and clean up because it's not the right ad structure to offer in a local market. It's a different type of service offering. So one of the things that we want to do with our show, Ronnie is going to be a regular. We work very closely. You and I talk 7 days a week now, I think. I think we go to the bathroom now when we're on the phone with each other. We've gotten so close, literally.
I drink a lot of water.
And so with that being said, if someone's coming in to sell you Amazon ads in a local market, here's why you don't need them. They're an e-commerce solution.
Yeah, so in a local market, Amazon is an e-commerce solution.
Online businesses.
Both just putting your products on Amazon and also running the ads. It's to sell products pretty much worldwide. You know, you can't really stop it. People from everywhere go there, and it's like the Google of products, basically. And so now that's a bad thing, you know, but what we're seeing now is there's an Amazon effect, right? And so,
but don't be fooled by optics. It may not be the solution for you. Amazon isn't the best solution for everybody. We know that.
No,
I would just think it's too oversaturated. There's too many options.
And Amazon's going to get the business.
Well, Amazon gets the business. Amazon keeps the customer, you know, Amazon keeps the customer
journey
data.
Is for Amazon.
And, you know, a lot of the reason that the people bought was because of Amazon, not necessarily because of maybe your product or service. You know, it's very widely known now that, oh, you know, hey, Amazon, I'm not happy with this thing right here. Okay, keep it and we'll send you, buy the next thing you want. You know, and so that kind of changes us as consumers and consumer behavior. That's hard to compete against, you know. But if you're starting out and you're selling products, I would not immediately go into Amazon. Amazon starts taking
your
a
audience.
Large percentage of your margin.
Of course.
And you can't.
All the giants.
That's something you can't overcome all the time.
And if they overtake it, then you've got to start over once they own it, correct?
Well, yeah, you somehow have to build out of that. And, you know, it's a contractual thing. You have to see, how you can sell single products at an advantage on your own website now because you signed a contract with Amazon. They're not going to allow you to compete on price. You can't have a lower price on your website than you have on Amazon. You know, that actually originally started with Expedia. So you can't go on Expedia and put your hotel room for, you know, $200 and then on your website sell it for $180. You know, so those have been, you, that's kind of the first thing that was sort of kiboshed. So when you go to these big online distributors, which that's all they are, they're distribution brands, right? Like Expedia, Booking.com, and Amazon, you have to be very careful when you're playing by their rules. And also make sure that in your strategy, you're leaving yourself a window to grow direct revenue. People that go to your website and call you and order online directly from you.
You never want to take people away from you or your website.
Exactly.
The moment you do, you're opening them up to other possibilities. Mm-hmm. And you've just built an entire cookie crumb trail to get them to where you are. So once you have them, that's where you want to close the sale, is right there. There's no need to take them anywhere else.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to compete against, right? Because Amazon has the shipping and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you can be pretty competitive with that today. You do have to research and shop around, but then also give them other reasons to buy from you. More value is what I would say if you buy direct.
I'm going to bring a phone number on the show. I was going to try to have it up by today, but would you be willing to come in like once a month and give free marketing advice?
Sure.
My notion is if we can just empower people with the real knowledge that they need to know, it makes our job easier because then we can get the lay of the land ready for a real solution. I have meetings coming up. One's with a neighbor who has 30,000 followers, and I'd like to see her making more money. I think there's a lot of people who have questions like that. And then I have another meeting with someone I know out of St. Augustine that just would like to get started. She wants to put her face out there. She's very pretty. What does that look like? So with that being said, I'd like to continue because I do believe marketing is popular. You gave me a statistic a couple of weeks ago that it's now an $800 billion industry surpassing medical. So there are more dollars being exchanged globally through marketing than there are going to doctor's offices even in the middle of all of this. That's how powerful marketing is.
Yeah, doctors, you know, pharmaceutical, like, and two, the platforms are self-serve. So we have more people running ads today. Influencers are now running ads, and which is so
diluted. Is that good? Do you want everybody running ads, or does it dilute it?
No, I think it's a fantastic strategy. So, we went to Colorado for our family summer vacation, and so while I was there and while I was researching it, I started getting ads up on Instagram from just normal people, but they have these very extensive Instagram pages that are filled with all things Colorado. You know, it's, some of them were women with kids, some of them were hardcore hikers. And so the influencer game is even changing to where now they're running ads, right? And so, you know, like part of that figure, and that figure is ever growing. You know, Google just posted their biggest numbers to date through the pandemic.
Oh, of course.
Just happened. Yeah. You know, and so the advertising figures are just going to continue to grow. The people, the businesses and all, and people advertising, that's going to continue to grow.
So
that's
waiting to get in the game is not good.
Not good.
You got to get, if you are at all teetering on the idea to make the jump into digital, A, call us, will help. But B, you can't continue to wait or sit in the spin zone. Mm-hmm. That's why.
Time is money.
Time is money, number one. Other people are doing it. From my vantage point, the biggest thing is every day you're not advertising on a platform, you're not gaining that knowledge of what your people are doing on there.
Right.
And that's the biggest thing. How can we sharpen our ad creative? How can we switch up our images? How can we add more video to boost engagement, to transfer more people to our website, to increase sales?
This show's a good example. You and I aren't going to sit down till after we log the third show, and then we'll start pulling out our analytics to see when you guys listen the most. These are called KPIs, key performance indicators, and I've got all of this set up through software that shows me when you're listening, where you're listening, how long you're listening, and it allows me to hone in on the topics that you like more so that I can cater to what you want and be successful. You know, you're like, we can't sit down maybe three or four shows in. We will start running ads on this to expand the audience. And this is all in an effort to generate demand for my business and for Ronnie's business and our marketing business. Lauren has a specialty in fertility, and we're going to go into that a little bit more and how we'd like to see this segue into something you'd like to do. It's 8:55 and Lauren was worried about us talking for an hour. I'm laughing, but I did want to get, because I said I would, to a Help a DILF segment, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. I think you can chime in on a couple of things.
Okay.
I want to thank you for coming in, being my friend, helping me so much with marketing, and just being a really sound, ethical man in today's doggy dog world that is helping people truly try to, you know, live for their dreams, like, as you know, make a living for their family. And I also like your balance. You know, you're very slow, you're very methodical, your kids come first, you also make your children dinner. You know, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, my hobby of watching cooking videos has paid off for everyone in my house.
You have
a step under a chef.
But you guys have a cookbook.
Yeah.
What's your cookbook?
It's called The Fit Body Way. It's on her site.
Fitness by Patty.
Fitness by Patty, PATTY.com.
A lot of people at the beach know Fitness by Patty. She's
everyone,
amazing.
Everyone knows Patty.
So back to the DILF question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What would you say is the secret to making a marriage last and work, from keeping things, you know, exciting, and how do you make it all work?
And how long have you been married, and how is it working? Yeah.
That's okay. So we've been married for 10 years. And I think we've been together for 14, like this. So so to the question, right?
Yeah.
I think that's different for everyone.
To be perfectly, because
as you grow and you get more friends, and your kids get friends in school, and then you meet their parents, and you know, like, you see all these different things, you're like, oh, okay, I kind of get how they work. I get how they work, but it can't work like that here. Right. And so, you know, us, we have a shared passion for the outdoors. That's like all this work and stuff. I love marketing, love it, but,
You live life.
It's kind of a back door. Yeah. To like, we spend a lot of money on travel, you know, and stuff. We always have. That's kind of, and that's what me and Patty have always bonded over, is that we have a, we work out together when we can. You know, we're very similar type people. Like, we're not, she doesn't drink, I'm not a big drinker. Not a huge partier.
Until I get you out one night. I'm just joking.
Sure. So
that did happen.
Like,
so it's recognizing your commonalities and really working to make sure that those are, stay present in your relationship.
You're friends. You two are friends.
Yeah. You know, we're you know, very much, you know, best friends. We have a lot in common together. And the big thing, too, I think, is that our personalities are kind of opposite. So she is mellow, very mellow. I am very Middle Eastern and can get like more uptight and, you know, that sort of thing. And so I think it's good too, because now that we have kids, you know, you got to worry about how they interact with you at home. I think that helps balance it.
Sure. So the question, this was from Glenn, that I wanted to carry over last week: where to meet people if you're not on an app? And I had thought about that this week. You wanted to chime in. Hey, I don't do dating apps. They don't work for me. They're not organic enough. But what has worked is I get set up a lot. Like, usually I'm always the single chick at dinner and somebody's like, hey, he's interested. Would you be willing to go on a date? So I get set up a lot through that way. I also think I am being more involved in my son's life. There are single dads out there as well. So I'm not open to that aspect and being very proactive in his sports and things like that. But you also brought up, where did you think was a good place to meet
people? I mean, I think if you're at all spiritual or religious, I think it's nice to have a religious organization, a church, someplace that, you know, kind of you have a different set of priorities, maybe. You're not necessarily looking for a quick hookup, but maybe some sort of a life partner, you know, someone that's more engaged in kind of the forever picture versus just right now. So
it's just not going to happen at home. I go out alone. I will literally, you know that. I'll go to dinner by myself. Mm-hmm. I'll sit at the end of a bar with a book. I'm not shy. So I think if it's something that you want, And you don't have to do it on an app. You have to put yourself out there more.
Yeah.
Anytime you get in the car to leave, I'll be like pumping gas. Like, is it him? Hey, you.
Anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
All of us dads get together. And like, not that we would change anything, but we're like, dude, today it's like friggin' cheating.
Yeah.
You're on an app. You send a text to one person. You have no skin in the game. We used to have to walk up, get humiliated half the time. You were sweaty and nervous. You know, like, it was just, and now, like, you get to pick the date spot through text or through the app messaging thing. It's cheating.
No real human connection.
You should have to go through.
Right. Yeah.
Let me watch my language. You should have to go through this, you know, muck, like, what we used to have to. Because, like, when me and Patty were dating, or when we first started dating, like, Match.com was not as mainstream. It was mainstream, but people were like, you're online?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's totally, it's common. Like, you're not online?
Mm-hmm. What are
you doing?
Oh, I know.
How are you meeting people?
You talk to humans? Yeah.
There's something wrong with me because I'm not online.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, you liked it and you ran it like a business. You met a few people.
Sure. I went on a few dates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My girlfriends that do it run it like a business.
It's got to be a lot easier.
I don't know. I won't do it. I'm not interested in
it. Like you said, it's not organic. It's not organic.
I want to touch. I got to look somebody in their eyes. I need to be in front of them to see if we're going to mesh. We're going to be bumping uglies. I got to see how ugly you are.
Well,
okay?
There you go.
Whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So I think that just get out. You used to tell me that. I'm very much a homebody. I've been single a really long time. And you're like, you're never going to meet somebody unless you go somewhere. So we
it's
go out a lot.
It's not going to happen sitting at home.
No, it's not going to happen sitting at home, Glenn. And call me. Let's have a conversation. And maybe I have a friend that may like you. I'll set you up. How to keep the spark. We're going to go a little bit over. I don't care. This is the beauty of not being on a network. Okay, Gear Bear out there. Gary, who owns the studios. How to keep the spark alive, in our opinion, after years together. Ronnie.
I'm guessing that's coming to
you. Yeah, I'm looking at you. And you could probably address that too. I cannot. So talk to me. How do you keep it? How do you keep that spark alive for the future wifey here? I mean, one day.
Well,
okay.
I'm thinking.
That sounds good.
We're going to give you some. You're gonna come up with some
I definitely
want
to go on date nights. You take her to nice dinners. You go out of your way to buy her things that you know she will like.
Date night is good, you know, but that's not a big.
You and Patty surf together.
Part of our, you know, deal there. Like, the date night is like a bonus.
Okay.
Sort of thing.
You guys trips, sans the kids. I've seen you do that.
Yeah,
you leave them
we
with
do,
the nanny.
You know, and that's good.
You have a full-time nanny. Does that keep it? Does that
help?
Okay,
that's the best thing you'll ever do in life. If you have one plus kid, highly recommend, if you can, get a nanny. Game changer on a personal level and on a business level, too.
Both you and your wife work full-time. Let's point that out. She runs a full-time business.
Yes.
Yeah.
My wife is
very successful.
Yeah. And she likes to work. Mm-hmm. And I think women today like to work. You know, I think they like that responsibility, that thing in their life, you know, that isn't stay at home, take care of the kids all day.
I would die.
Yeah. So,
I would die.
You know, I mean, today everyone's educated,
no.
You know, and I think so. I think that's a big thing. But I don't know. Me and Patty are both kind of we don't necessarily have a problem in that department. We're very
solid,
but we're like personality wise, we're also very like cuddly.
You, the
it's
Arabic?
Your love language, yeah.
For lack of a better term. Yeah, so, you know, we're
she
always...
had you in a banana costume last year on Halloween, and it was the best thing I had ever seen.
Yeah, I was a big banana.
And you posted a picture. I was very
One
impressed.
Year, we were Superman and Wonder Woman.
And that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, he dresses up with it. Like, it's the cutest thing I've ever seen.
She made the costumes, yeah.
Ethan makes me do it as well. All right, last question that we're going to get to, because the school year is starting here. With the school year starting and schedules becoming saturated, suggestions for establishing a better balancing act. Normally, one parent seems to be carrying the majority of the parental weight. Yes, that is true. We talked about this on the way in.
For us, that's all we have. It's just us managing our kids and our work life and home life and all of that. So I think we have a different perspective than, say, maybe a couple who, you know, co-parents together. in an effort to make the household run more smoothly.
Mm-hmm. We're 50-50 on all the kids' chores.
Really? Well, and it stays that way consistently?
Yeah. I make lunches and snacks. She does bath time.
Where do you come from?
And
So
in the morning, like, she has 2 days a week where she takes early morning clients. So those are my mornings for pickup and all that. Yeah, so like we're pretty 50-50. And then our nanny is there, you know, like all through the middle of the day and helps out and all that. You know, big bonus, I actually like to cook. So that's always my duty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the most part. So either me or our nanny. Yeah, so Patty, you know, she'll go to the store. She does a lot of, like, the kids' stuff. And I'll, you know, like if I'm cooking, she'll take them off or whatever.
It's hard to do it all.
Yeah. You know, it's hard to have them in the kitchen when you're trying to, like, you know, plow through meal prep and all that.
And going through, like, I think this is a fun analogy. I wanted you to come stay with me this summer because you do have three kids. I know it's hard. You're working from home online and everybody's been home. So I just think, too, as things begin to pick up, making sure you're just there. Like you told, I was trying to be your partner, making the kids dinner and just helping you out to ease your day.
It is a balancing act.
It's a balancing act, totally. Always. Yeah, and being proactive in that is just... I think it's everything. I do want to mention that we're going to be on again next week at 8 a.m. I'm going to have you back, Ronnie. You are awesome. Thank you so much. I cannot sing your praises enough. It's Soud, S-O-U-D, soudmarketing.com. Check him out. He showcases who he's worked with, and you'll see why you need him for your ads. You can listen to the podcast. I got it up last Friday live. It's on all the major directories. And when I get off the show, I'll put the Buzzsprout link back in my bio that you can click on and go straight for download for it. So it's on my social media right now. You can reach us on Kimber McCafferty on Instagram and then Kimber McCafferty on my Facebook. And then I do go over to my McCafferty Communications and post it as well and on Lauren's. We got a lot of downloads from last week. So I want to thank you guys for supporting this part of our journey. And if there's anything that you want us to talk about, please don't hesitate. We're having fun. We're having a really good time and we're going to keep going. So do you want to say anything?
Have a great week.
Yeah. Have
Thanks
a great week.
Us.
Stay positive.
Thanks for
liking our dance videos. It shows a different part of our personality, but we do dance in the kitchen. All right, you guys, have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week. Okay, bye-bye.